Hello and welcome to the Decorum Talking Newspaper for the week ending Saturday 15th of November. This is Graham and your other readers are Josephine, Kevin and Nicola. The editor this week is Mark. We are all members of Team 5. We are sponsored by Boom Construction and their message is, we are proud to support Decorum Talking Newspaper. We are a specialist contractor and we pride ourselves on our innovative project solutions and our proactive approach to building and maintaining long-lasting relationships. Contact us by telephone on Hemel 767 760 or at boomconstruction.co.uk. Most of our news items are taken from the Hemel Hempstead, Berk Hempstead and Tring Gazette and Express newspaper. All telephone numbers are on the local code of 01442 unless stated otherwise. This week's headlines: Tributes to Wonderful Dad, Admission Rules Unfair, and 1,500 poppies on display. These and other stories follow. Here is the news.
Hello, this is Josephine. A man has died from injuries sustained after an assault at a charity event in Hemel Hempstead last month. Jack Oliver Frogel, 48, known to family and friends as Ollie, died in hospital on Tuesday, November 4th, from injuries suffered at the event, which was held at the town's football club. Police said there was an altercation between two men in Vauxhall Way around 12:40 a.m. in the early hours of Saturday, October 25th, with one of the men punched in the face. A 38-year-old man was arrested on suspicion of GBH the day after the attack. Paying tribute to her husband Ollie's wife said, "Our beloved Ollie, loved by so many, he was truly the most wonderful dad and loving husband, but also the heart of our community. This has left us with a huge void in our lives that can never be filled." Police are continuing to appeal for witnesses and information following the incident, and Detective Inspector Kiva Taylor from the Bedfordshire, Cambridgeshire and Hertfordshire Major Crime Unit said, "Our thoughts are with Ollie's family at this very difficult time. We are urging any witnesses who have not yet spoken with police to please come forward and help. We want to find out exactly what happened in the lead up to the assault. If you have any information or witnessed what happened, please get in touch with us. If you attended the event but did not see the assault, you may still be able to help. Please get in touch as you could have useful information." I would also like to add that we are aware of footage of the incident circulating and we would ask that people do not share this any further, as to do so could jeopardise any future criminal proceedings. Tributes and messages of sympathy to the family were posted on social media following the police's announcement of Ollie's death. Lucky Hughes wrote, "Ollie was a really lovely person, always smiling and had such a funny personality. He will be greatly missed by many. Thoughts are with his family and close friends." Tony Conway wrote, "Can't believe it. We were only singing your name at Wigan away in the FA Cup on Saturday. I genuinely thought you'd pull through. Even told myself we'd have a proper chat next time I saw you, since the last time at the clubhouse was just a passing nod. Absolutely gutted. You were a top bloke." Information related to the incident can be reported to the Hertfordshire Police online by speaking to an operator in the Forces Communications Room, through the online web chat, or by calling 101, quoting Operation Teamer. Alternatively, information can be reported anonymously to Crime Stoppers by calling 0800 555 111.
Hello, this is Kevin. Several parents have lodged formal objections to proposals granting one primary school priority over others for secondary placements at a popular Hemel Hempstead school. New proposals released by the Scholars Education Trust, SET, regarding admissions at the Hemel Hempstead School have been released. Under the new scheme, which would come into effect for the 2027 to 28 academic year, Oakleaf Primary School students would get priority over others. This has caused concern among some parents in Hemel Hempstead, who hoped their children would attend the popular school, which opened almost 90 years ago. It is claimed that 15 other primary education centres are closer to the Hemel Hempstead School than Oakleaf Primary, which is roughly 1.5 miles away. In objection letters sent to the Trust, which have been seen by the Gazette, concerns have been raised around the more difficult travel arrangements families would have to make to attend schools further afield. They say this would lead to an increase in cars on the road and potential pollution around Hemel Hempstead. In announcing the proposals last week, the Trust and school, who both declined requests for comment, said a Year 7 allocation of £217 has been chosen for the term starting in September 2027. If the school is oversubscribed, priority will go to children attending Oakleaf Primary School after other clauses relating to siblings, medical needs and staff relatives. A committee from the SET said these changes reflected the fact the schools share the same vision and values. With both schools being in the same trust, it is argued that children will benefit from shared resources and collaboration between them. Many complaints seen by the Hemel Gazette came from the Boxmoor area, while parents were also frustrated with the proposals being launched during half term, when it is harder to speak with representatives. Parents have questioned whether the changes meet criteria set out in the 2021 UK Schools Admissions Code, which recommends proximity-based admissions. One said, instead of incentivising families to attend an underperforming primary school by offering a pathway to a popular secondary school, the Trust should focus on raising standards and letting results and reputation speak for itself to raise admissions for Oakleaf.
Hello, this is Nicola continuing the story. They also claim that more engagement should have been made with local businesses who might lose customers who move elsewhere in the Hemel Hempstead region to secure admission spots. The proposals have been called unfair and in conflict with the school's community principles. However, upon announcing the proposal, a spokesperson for the school and trust said staff from the two schools share professional development opportunities such as the staff conference, ongoing CPD and joint curriculum planning. They work together in the Trust's teaching and learning digital strategy and people working parties. In addition, SET Central, SEND and attendance teams work across both schools. This means that both schools use the same systems and processes to support in these areas, and that Central staff are able to provide high quality information about pupils transitioning between the two schools. A six-week consultation period was opened by the school and trust last Monday, and parents can fill in an online survey sharing their thoughts with decision makers. See https://shorturl.at/AZOBW. The consultation period will be shut on December the 14th. All comments will be compiled into a report which will be analysed by the Trust Committee, a board organised by the Trust which runs 10 schools within Hertfordshire, Bedfordshire and Essex will have final say on whether to approve the motion.
Neville Funerals, part of the Neville Trust Group of companies, marked Remembrance Day with a remarkable display made up of more than 1,500 individually handcrafted poppies at its Hemel Hempstead branch. Staff from across the company, along with family and friends and volunteers from the local community, helped produce the poppies as part of a project launched back in the summer. The initiative welcomed knitters and crocheters of all skill levels and was designed to bring people together to mark the National Day of Remembrance. James Witham, Hemel Hempstead branch manager, explained, "We set ourselves the challenge of knitting 1,500 poppies and the response was excellent. By the end of September, we had already reached halfway and now we have overtaken our target by some way. The project has given people a way to take part in something purposeful and mark the day in a hands-on way. It has been amazing." Every year, we look to recognise Remembrance Day in a different way. Last year, our Dunstable branch featured a curtain of poppies at the front of the building. This year, the Hemel Hempstead display is our focus. As a funeral business with a deep-rooted history across the region, Remembrance Day marks a key date, and each year we aim to create a meaningful display to show our respect. We know how much these tributes mean to the communities we support, and I'd like to say a huge thank you to everyone who volunteered their time to make our vision a reality. As part of its ongoing Remembrance Day activity, Neville Funerals will also continue to lay wreaths at local war memorials across Bedfordshire, Hertfordshire and Buckinghamshire. These wreaths are placed by representatives from each branch. James continued, "This year marks Neville's Trust's 150th anniversary year, during which we have, as a business, committed to achieving 150 days of volunteering. The Poppy Project has played a part in that volunteering effort, and we could not be more delighted with the result. Neville Funerals Hemel Hempstead branch is located at 75 Marlowe's in the town centre, providing a wonderful display for anyone to come and visit. More information about Neville Funerals can be found at nevillefuneralsservice.com.
Eleven councils across Hertfordshire have agreed a draft joint submission to government that proposes replacing them with one of three options. Hertfordshire currently operates under an upper two-tier system of local government, with a county council and 10 smaller districts and boroughs. By April 2028, that structure is expected to be replaced by a much smaller number of unitary authorities. In recent months, council leaders across Hertfordshire, in conjunction with the Police and Crime Commissioner, have been looking at the best options for local government reorganisation in the county. They've now published for the first time the draft of a joint submission that will be put to the government by the November 26th deadline. Within the 410-page document, there are three different proposals that would divide the county into two, three, or four unitary councils. Over the next 2 weeks, each of Hertfordshire's 11 councils will decide which proposal to back in a series of meetings held in public. Ultimately, however, Housing, Communities and Local Government Secretary Steve Reid will determine whether to take forward any of the councillor's options or respond with an option of his own. All three options have already been highlighted during a four-week period of public engagement, which has fed into the document. Under option one, the county would be split into two unitary authorities, East, the areas currently covered by Broxburn, East Harts, North Harts, Stevenage and Wellen Hatfield councils, and West, Decorum, Hartsmere, St Albans, Three Rivers and Watford. Each authority would serve a population of around 600,000 and have 117 councillors. Estimates suggest the change would ultimately cut local government costs by around £50 million a year, with estimated cumulative savings between £366 million and £418 million in the first 10 years. This option, according to the document, offers the highest saving of the three. Supporters suggest it offers the greater potential for lower council tax bills and say it's best placed to protect services, lessening the risks of disintegration of county-wide services. They point to clear geographies of each authority area, equal in terms of population, assets and need, and say they believe both areas are poised for growth. They do accept there is a risk that this option could be perceived as being more remote, but they point to the potential for area boards and a commitment for all models to deliver the same local delivery of services.
Option two in the submission to the government is for three unitary authorities: East, Broxbourne, East Harts, North Harts and Stevenage councils. In the West, Decorum, Three Rivers and Watford, plus the Bushy North and Bushy South County Council divisions. And Central, Hartsmere, St Albans and Welling Hatfield, without Bushy North and Bushy South. Populations in each of these three authorities would range between 350,000 and 480,000, and there would be a total of 234 councillors overall. Estimates suggest the three unitary model would cut costs by 181 million to 258 million in the first 10 years. Supporters say the model would offer responsive services at a local level as well as local accountability, but would also be large enough for strategic integration. Feedback, they say, has emphasised the need for local and responsive services, with the plans including the potential for 15 place boards. Option three is for the four unitary authorities: West, Decorum and St Albans; South West, Hartsmere, Three Rivers and Watford; Central, the bulk of North Harts and Welling Hatfield, plus the whole of Stevenage; and East, Broxbourne and East Harts, plus the existing North Harts wards of Arbury, Emmeen, Royston Heath, Royston Meridian, Royston Palace and Weston and Sandon, and the Welling Hatfield ward of Northaw and Cuffley. Populations in these four unitaries would vary between 290,000 and 320,000. Of the three options, it would have the highest number of councillors, with 327. Supporters of the four unitary model say that by design, these councils are closer to communities and cite higher levels of support from residents. However, estimates suggest it offers the lowest saving of the three options, 124 million over the first 10 years. The document has been drawn up jointly by officials and leaders from the 11 councils in Hertfordshire. The chair of the Hearts Leaders Group, Liberal Democrat Councillor Stephen Giles Medhurst, believes it is almost unique for 11 authorities, irrespective of political colours, to have worked together on a joint submission in this way. He stresses that they will continue to do so in order to get the best deal for Hertfordshire, whichever model the government opts to take forward. Over the next 2 weeks, the document will be discussed by each of the 11 councils. Each council can back just one of the options in the final submission.
Litter bins in lay-bys on the A41 in Decorum have been removed by the Borough Council as part of the efforts to tackle fly-tipping. A report by Councillor Robin Bromham, Liberal Democrats, portfolio holder for Neighbourhood Operations, said Decorum Borough Council is taking a zero-tolerance approach to fly-tipping at the nine A41 lay-bys within Decorum. He said the presence of the now-removed litter bins was causing litter and continued, drivers were pulling over to dump bags of waste in and around the litter bins. Then the overflow bins would cause litter to throw across the carriageway from where it's expensive to retrieve. Signage was installed to encourage drivers passing through Decorum to take their rubbish with them without the need for our citizens to pay for its collection and disposal. This is proving very effective. Along the A41 in the last 2 months since the changes were implemented, a considerable reduction of fly tipping is being observed and data is being recorded to measure effectiveness. Responding to a question from Councillor Edward Baradell, Conservative, in a full council meeting on October the 23rd, Councillor Bromham said fly tipping on the A41 had brought huge expense for residents due to the cost of clearing the rubbish. He said it cost about £20,000 to do a litter pick and £20,000 to close the road. It was costing a lot of money also to empty the bins, which was being wildly abused. You don't have to wait very long in those nine lay-bys to see cars pull up, probably from outside Decorum, unload the car boot into those litter bins or around the litter bins and drive off. That rubbish blows across the road and makes a terrible mess. According to Councillor Bromham, evidence from removing bins at parks had shown that somewhat counterintuitively, the amount of litter declined after the changes. He said, you don't get rubbish blown out of the bins and you don't get the general expectation that people have to empty their bins there when they have something to dispose of.
A Hemel Hempstead curry house has been crowned the best Indian restaurant in Hertfordshire at a major awards. Olive Naturally Indian in Lawn Lane took home the coveted title at the Euro Asia Curry Awards 2025. and its sister restaurant of the same name in High Street, St Albans, won Best Newcomer Indian Restaurant in Hertfordshire. The annual event honours the very best of the UK's curry industry, with awards recognising top restaurants, takeaways, newcomers and chefs. More than 450 establishments and individuals from across the country entered the contest, with around 60 winners announced in both regional and national categories. This year's ceremony was held on October 27th at the ILEC Conference Centre in West Brompton, London. The Euro-Asia Curry Awards were founded 9 years ago by Bangladeshi chef and businessman Shorif Khan. He said, "It was wonderful to be back again this year to celebrate the fantastic businesses and people that make the UK curry industry as loved as it is. Despite the long-term impacts of the pandemic and rising costs, these restaurants and takeaways continue to offer incredible food, service and value. What's also very encouraging is that we've seen a lot of new openings in the past 12 months, many of which have been honoured at this year's awards. For more information about the awards, visit EuroAsiaCurryAward.com.
The chairman of Hertfordshire County Council, HCC, has vowed to continue in his role amid a vicious campaign which he and his family have received the most terrible abuse. It follows a meeting on October 21st at which county councillors voted narrowly for the authority to review its pension policy in light of a petition presented by the Hearts Palestine Support Coalition, which claims the council's pension fund had invested £95 million in companies complicit in grave human rights abuses against Palestinians. Since then, Councillor Lawrence Brass, who chaired the meeting, says he has received thousands of emails that he describes as very nasty, and at least one threat of physical violence that's been passed to Hertfordshire Police. He claims most of the emails which call for him to resign or label him a traitor have come from within the Jewish community, of which he is a member. Now, an online petition has been launched calling for him to resign as chairman, but Councillor Brass has vowed to continue in the role, refusing to be deterred by threats and abuse that he says are based on misinformation. The petition is part of a vicious campaign against me waged over the past 2 weeks, he told the Local Democracy Reporting Service, LDRS. My family have been abused and I've been subjected to the most terrible abuse and bullying you could imagine. It's based on complete misinformation and it's very distressing. I'm carrying on with my job. I've not been intimidated. I will not let the hate merchants win because they've got the wrong end of the stick. At the October 21st meeting, the decision that HCC's Pensions Committee should review the council's responsible investment policy was made after councillors were presented with the Hearts Palestine Support Coalition petition. Backed by 1,525 residents, calling on the council to divest its pension fund from companies complicit in war crimes, apartheid and occupation. In particular, it called for the Hertfordshire Local Government Pension Scheme to divest from companies complicit in Israel's well-documented human rights abuses against Palestinians. Councillors voted 37-36 in favour of the review motion. Crucially, in advance of that vote, it was stressed to members that a decision to review the pension policy would not prejudge any conclusion that the review might reach. Councillor Brass says the abuse he has received since then focuses on the fact that he did not vote and an accusation that he stopped a councillor from speaking. That is echoed in the latest petition, which said it was nothing short of disgraceful for the motion to be debated by the County Council. Councillor Brass said he did not vote because the chairman should be impartial and that he allows councillors to speak for their allotted time.
Berkhamsted's health and wellness scene just got a major upgrade as Ivy Boost UK, the doctor and nurse-led clinic renowned for its advanced IV nutrient and wellness therapies, has moved into larger premises at 162 to 166 High Street, Berkhamsted, just across the road from its previous location. During its 3 years in Berkhamsted, IV Boost UK has rapidly grown a loyal following of clients who travel from across the country to experience its evidence-based treatments and personalised care. The expansion reflects both its continued success and the rising demand for proactive, preventative approaches to health. Kerry Dean Eilenfeld, Clinical Director and partner IV Boost UK, said, "People are more focused than ever on taking control of their own health and well-being. In our view, it's about health span, not just lifespan. Our new premises allow us to meet that growing demand with more space, more equipment, and an environment designed around our patients' needs. Whether someone values privacy and calm or prefers the opportunity to chat and connect with others, we've created a space that supports their experience. The new, more accessible High Street location provides enhanced facilities and treatment areas to accommodate a wider range of therapies, from vitamin infusions and IV drips to targeted wellness treatments that support energy, immunity, recovery, and vitality. IV Boost UK chose Berkhamsted not only for its proximity to London, but also for its thriving community." Kerry adds, "We have premises in London and plans to expand the business across the UK, but Berkhamsted is a wonderful location offering a beautiful high street with a great cafes, independent shops, and an easy connection to the station. It's the perfect balance between accessibility and charm." John McLaughlin of Sorbon Estates, owners of the premises, said, "It's fantastic to see IV Boost UK thriving in Berkhamsted. The company brings something truly unique to the town's wellness and lifestyle offering, and we're delighted to support its expansion. The team's commitment to health, innovation, and patient experience makes IV Boost UK a real asset to the High Street."
Hemel Hempstead MP David Taylor has met with Home Secretary Shabeen Mahmood to discuss tackling crime and antisocial behaviour in the town following a series of major police operations across Hertfordshire. During the meeting, Mr Taylor asked for Hemel Hempstead to be included in the pilot area for the government's new Respect Orders, which aims to give police stronger powers to deal with persistent offenders and nuisance behaviour. Mr Taylor said, "Our community is a place to be proud of, but residents tell me antisocial behaviour continues to blight parts of Hemel Hempstead and residents have had enough. I've made it clear to the Home Secretary that Hemel should be at the front of the queue for the Respect Order pilot so we can take tougher action against those who make life miserable for others." The MP also emphasised the need for stronger partnerships working between local authorities, housing associations and police forces, particularly in the wake of recent enforcement activity in Hemel Hempstead. "Recent major operations by Hertfordshire Police have shown what can be achieved when agencies work together," Mr Taylor added. "That joined-up approach is essential if we're to make lasting progress in tackling crime and restoring confidence in our community." Mr Taylor also took the opportunity to pay tribute to Hertfordshire Police for their professionalism and dedication in protecting local residents. "Our officers do an outstanding job under immense pressure. They deserve our full support and they kept our streets safe," he said.
Motorists across Hertfordshire are being reminded to stop whenever they are asked to do so by school crossing patrols as part of the latest Stop Mean Stop campaign. Across the county, there's a network of 150 school crossing patrols on hand to help children and their parents cross busy roads before and after school. By law, motorists are required to stop whenever the distinctive lollipop sign, which is clearly marked stop, is raised. The County Council's Executive Member for Environment, Growth and Transport, Councillor Paul Zukowski, stresses that the vast majority of motorists already comply with the signs, but he says there are still too many that fail to do so. This week, the countywide Stop Mean Stop campaign sets out to reinforce the legal and moral responsibility of drivers to stop. As part of the campaign, a number of patrols are wearing high visibility Stop Mean Stop tabards, with messages being promoted across the council's social media channels. Footage from body-worn cameras, which are routinely issued to patrols in specific locations, will capture any incidents that will be reported to the police. With the campaign, we're trying to raise the profile of school crossing patrols and the dangers they face if motorists don't comply, said Councillor Zukowski. The vast majority of drivers do what they're supposed to do, but it only takes one to knock a child over. Our school crossing patrols do a fantastic job, and they're doing their level best to keep our kids safe. People need to abide by the law, and stop does mean stop. Officials say the campaign is part of a wider effort to improve road safety and to encourage active travel to school, such as walking or cycling.
Hemel Hempstead paused to remember Sunday, November 9th as the town marked Remembrance Sunday. The annual Remembrance Parade took its traditional route from the town centre to the War Memorial at St John's Church in Boxmoor, with more than 600 people participating. Among the attendees were Mayor of Decorum, Councillor Catherine McAreevy, Lord Lieutenant of Hertfordshire Robert Voss, and Hemel Hempstead MP David Taylor. In a post on social media, Decorum Borough Council wrote, "Thank you to everyone who supported this year's Remembrance Sunday parade and service at the Boxmoor War Memorial. It was wonderful to see our community unite in such large numbers to honour those who gave their lives in the two world wars and other conflicts. On November 11th, a short Remembrance Day service was held at the Garden of Remembrance in the town centre, organised by the town's branch of the Royal British Legion."
Now we come to the information slot. This is followed by What's On and Sport.
This week in history. November 16th, 1989, a pillar of South African apartheid crumbled when beach access restrictions were removed by President F.W. de Klerk. On this day last year, Paul Mescal praised his fellow Irish star and friend, Saoirse Ronan, for speaking out on women's safety in a viral clip from The Graham Norton Show, saying she hit the nail on the head. The two Oscar nominees appeared on the BBC One talk show where Academy Award winner Eddie Redmayne was talking about his training for his role as a lone assassin in Sky Atlantic series The Day of the Jackal and how he was taught how to use a phone in an attack. November 17th, 1989. Franz Kafka's manuscript of his classic novel The Trial, 1925, was sold at Sotheby's in London for £1 million, a world record for a modern literary text. Kafka had died in poverty the year before. November 18, 1987. The worst fire in the history of the London Underground killed 31 people at King's Cross. On this day last year, Sir Keir Starmer met Chinese President Xi Jinping at the G20 summit in Brazil, the first time a British premier has met him since 2018. And November 19, 1942, the Russians counterattacked at Stalingrad and surrounded the German army.
Christmas magic is returning to the Marlowe Shopping Centre as Santa's Grotto makes its much-anticipated return for another festive season. And this year, it's supporting an incredibly special cause. For 2025, the Marlowe's has chosen the National Children's Air Ambulance as its official Grotto charity partner. All donations raised throughout the festive period will help this vital service continue its life-saving work for critically ill babies and children across the UK. This year's Grotto will be open on selected dates between Saturday 6th of December and Christmas Eve. offering families a truly heartwarming festive experience. Each child will receive a free treat to make the visit even more special, and to ensure every child can enjoy the magic, SEN-friendly sessions will take place every Sunday at 10:30 a.m, providing a calmer and more inclusive environment. Humphrey Mwanza, Centre Manager at the Marlowe's Shopping Centre, said, "We're delighted to welcome Santa back to the Marlowe's for another magical Christmas. The grotto is always such a special part of our festive celebrations, bringing joy to families across Hemel Hempstead. This year, we're proud to be supporting the National Children's Air Ambulance, a charity that does truly incredible work helping children and families in need. We know our visitors will join us in giving generously and helping to make a real difference this Christmas. The National Children's Air Ambulance provides rapid helicopter transfers for young patients in need of urgent specialist care, flying them up to 4 times faster than by road. Working in partnership with NHS paediatric and neonatal transport teams, the service ensures children receive the treatment they need as quickly as possible, wherever they are in the country. Importantly, the charity receives no government funding and relies entirely on donations to keep its helicopters flying. Community support from initiatives such as the Marlowe's Grotto make a real difference to families in their most difficult moments." Robert Oram, Community Fundraising Executive, the National Children's Air Ambulance, said, "We're incredibly grateful to the Marlowe's for choosing to support the National Children's Air Ambulance through their grotto this year. Every donation helps us to keep our helicopters flying and ensures children across the UK can reach the specialist care they need as quickly as possible. It's wonderful to have the community support, especially during the festive season. Families can visit Santa and his elves at the Marlowe's Grotto throughout the Christmas season to enjoy a magical festive experience while helping to raise funds for this life-saving charity. For further details on events at the Marlowe's Shopping Centre, visit the Marlowe's website."
The government is shaking up the national curriculum and introducing media literacy lessons in schools from September 2028. This will see primary pupils learning media and information literacy, MIL, in school for the first time. MIL is all about our ability to think carefully about what we see or hear online, on TV or in newspapers, and how to decide whether it's trustworthy. Pupils will gain vital skills like how to spot fake news, identity misinformation and disinformation, and become critical thinkers. This summer, after speaking to experts from the likes of First News, the Media and Information Literacy Alliance, MILA, and the Guardian Foundation, the House of Lords Communications and Digital Committee produced a report calling for MIL to be taught to all children to protect them from the dangers of false information. The announcement shows that the government has agreed with those recommendations. A new test for Year 8. In further changes, a new reading test will be introduced in Year 8. This will help schools to identify pupils who need a bit of extra support, with around a quarter of children leaving primary school without being able to properly read. The teaching of computing at GCSE will also change and be made broader. Plus, there will be an A1 qualification, AI qualification, for 16 to 18-year-olds. Additional reforms will ensure that every child gets access to sport, arts and extracurricular activities. Pupils will also be encouraged to study arts, humanities and languages alongside core subjects like English, maths and science.
Going green, Angela Terry writes, "I heard Donald Trump ranting about wind farms near his golf course. Is he right about them? In a visit to Scotland, the American president moaned about renewable energy, particularly wind turbines. However, his comments about them, and particularly their cost, is simply wrong. The overwhelming majority of people in the UK support more renewable energy, not less. The wind is free, so the cost of electricity will reduce as we rely less on globally traded, expensive fossil fuels. Wind turbines work by harvesting the wind and very cleverly turning to face into the direction of the wind. The higher the tower, the faster the wind, and the longer the blades, the more power they generate, which is why offshore wind turbines are so impressive. As the blades rotate, electricity is generated like a reverse fan. Cables then transfer the green electrons down the turbine to a transformer. From the substation, the electricity is connected into the network and the energy flows into our homes to keep the lights on and power our economy. As an island, the British Isles has some of the best wind resources in Europe, especially in winter when demand is greatest, which is why offshore wind farms are booming, creating jobs and boosting our economy. Crucially, as a renewable energy source, no politician can stop the wind, as Putin did to gas supplies when Russia invaded Ukraine, nor does the wind run out, unlike North Sea gas and oil reserves. So wind power is good for UK PLC, strengthens energy security, and are excellent for the environment. When gas is burnt in power stations, it produces carbon dioxide. This is the main pollution responsible for global warming, so every unit of electricity from wind is less pollution put into the atmosphere. So the quicker we get off gas, the better for all of us and for protecting future generations. The clean energy transition is happening all over the world, including in China, as it is a fabulous new industry that the UK is embracing. We have decreased our greenhouse gas emissions by over 50%, which is incredible. So the UK is not only world leading, but with the right policies, we still have a chance to hit our legally binding net zero targets, according to Professor Piers Foster, the chairman of the Climate Change Committee. Donald Trump makes a strong but wrong statement. For energy security and climate, the cost of inaction is huge, which is why the UK, along with the rest of the world, is going green. Extreme weather has a huge cost to our wealth and our health, and sadly the polluters, the big oil and gas companies, do not pay for this damage. The Office of the Budget Responsibility estimates a £200 billion cost to our economy, equivalent to 8% of GDP, if global temperatures continue to rise by an average of 3 degrees C. We simply can't afford to stop progress and the transition to clean British energy. It really is a win-win from wind.
Don't become a scam victim. Shoppers are being warned about a spike in purchase fraud ahead of the festive shopping season. Purchase scams accounted for 63% of bank transfer fraud cases reported between January and September 2025. That's up from 52% across the same period last year. Victims lost an average of £452 per scam this year. So here are three top tips. Number one, be cautious of deals offering popular items that are sold out elsewhere. Number two, choose your payment method wisely. Paying by credit card can give people more protection. Number three, try to stick to websites which are trusted and platforms with secure payment options.
Now for what's on in the rest of November. Music. St Albans Symphony Orchestra, St Albans Cathedral, November the 15th. Enjoy three great choral works, Herbert Howell's Magnificent Collegium Regal, Dvorak's Stabat Mater, and Mendelssohn's Hear My Prayer, with four choirs taking part. Visit stalbanscathedral.org to book. And in theatre, Christmas Gothic, Old Town Hall, Hemel Hempstead, November the 22nd and 23rd. The Old Town Hall's resident company, the award-winning Dyad Productions, is back with its atmospheric celebration of the festive ghost story. A dark and spectral woman tells haunting tales of the festive season, lighting a candle to the frailties of human nature and illuminating the cold and chilling depths of the bleak, wintry dark. Following the international touring success of Female Gothic and plays including Lady Susan and A Room of One's Own, Dyad Productions resurrects the Victorian tradition by presenting three seasonal tales of terror to scintillate the flesh for dark Christmas nights. Visit oldtownhall.co.uk or call 01442 228091 to book. And in comedy, Hal Cruttendon can dish it out but can't take it. That's on at the Old Town Hall, Hemel Hempstead, November the 15th and 16th. Hal will be pontificating on subjects like middle-aged dating, social media, the insanity of modern politics, and the fact that his daughters love him but don't respect him. Call 01442 228 091 to book.
Stage. Annabelle Croft. From Tennis Balls to Glitter Balls. Eric Morecambe Centre, November 15th. The former tennis pro turned experienced broadcaster talks about her experiences from the world of sport to presenting television to dancing on Strictly. Call 01582 767 525 to book. Theatre. Mary Poppins, Milton Keynes Theatre until November 22nd. Based on the stories of P.L. Travers and the Walt Disney film, the story of the world's favourite nanny arriving on Cherry Tree Lane promises dazzling choreography, incredible effects and unforgettable songs. The timeless score includes Jolly Holiday, Step in Time, Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious and Feed the Birds. With new songs and additional music and lyrics by the Olivier Award-winning British team of George Stiles and Anthony Drew. Acclaimed Australian stars Stephanie Jones and Jack Chambers reprise their roles as Mary Poppins and Bert. Visit atgtickets.com/Milton Keynes to book.
Hemel's Christmas light switch on is back. Let's kick off the festive season together on 15th of November, 1 p.m. to 6 p.m. in Hemel Town Centre. Enjoy live music from local artists, schools and dance groups, fun fair rides and festive market stalls, delicious food and drink, free face painting, spectacular live entertainment and fire show, free Christmas storytelling in No Ordinary Bookshop. It's the perfect way to start your Christmas celebrations and fun for the whole family. For full details, visit hemelhempsteadbid.com.
And Christmas fairs and other activities associated with Christmas in the rest of November. Winter Fair, Saturday the 15th of November, 1 p.m. till 4:30 p.m. at the Village Hall, Leverstock Green. Admission £1, children free. Belsane School Christmas Market, Saturday the 22nd of November, from 1 p.m. till 4:30 p.m. St. Mary's Christmas Bazaar, Saturday the 29th of November, from 12 noon at St. Mary's, London Road, Apsley. And St. John's Boxmoor Christmas Fair, Saturday the 22nd of November, from 10 a.m.
O's are an alternative outfit from Hemel Hempstead. They combine influences from a multitude of genres. The Friends in Dark Places EP, their debut release, was put out in July 2023 with the explosive single Money's Worth leading the campaign. Support acts, Concy and Romana Marks. The Old Town Hall, Friday 21st of November, tickets £12. For more info, visit oldtownhall.co.uk/events/O's.
In support of National Trust monthly meeting with a speaker, Hearing Dogs for the Deaf, Jenny Smith, will talk about its charity and her life as a volunteer and partner with a hearing dog. Tuesday, 18th of November, 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Hemel Hempstead Methodist Church, 270 Northridge Way, Hemel Hempstead.
It was another frustrating evening for Storm, the basketball team, as they came away from a long trip north empty-handed for the second weekend in a row. Last Saturday it was Yorkshire, and this one Newcastle, with the Knights claiming a 96-87 victory on Tyneside. The margins remained slim for Jake Rothalge's men, agonisingly close at various points throughout the game, but they are currently lacking the conviction that comes with the winning habit. When on runs such as these, they've lost three in a row and six of their last eight, despite being more than competitive. It can feel like everything is against you, whether it's opponents hitting tough shots while your own somehow fail to drop, referees calls going the other way, or injuries disrupting rotations. The rub of the green just doesn't seem on your side. Such misfortune can't last forever, however. After a brutal run of four consecutive away fixtures, Storm are back at home next weekend, and they'll hope that acts as the catalyst for their season to spring into life. Darian Nelson-Henry had 27 points in a dominant display under the basket, but it was further afield when Storm found their troubles. They connected with just one of 12 attempts from three-point range, 8%, while Newcastle hit 10 of 27, 37%, equating to a staggering 27 more points than Storm. The margin of defeat was 9, one-third of that figure. They also turned the ball over 23 times, 10 more than the Knights, as they continue to search for complete cohesion. They are all issues that can be fixed, however, and the ingredients are all there. They simply have to train hard and trust their quality to shine through. One area they must address is a tendency to start slow. Again, they were beaten out of the blocks by their opponents, a well-drilled Newcastle team with unerring shooting accuracy, losing the first quarter by 10, and it proved significant. Jaron James Thames, the league's leading scorer, was in ruthless form for the Knights, scoring his team's first 5 points and ending with a game-winning 29. Sam Trunley and Bradley Dean weren't far behind, grabbing 22 and 20 respectively, and they all contributed as their side took the opening period 30-20. Storm worked hard to cut the lead to 3 near the end of the second, the game within their reach, but it slipped away from them and the deficit was extended to 7 at half time, 48-41. They laboured somewhat out of the locker room, or should I say courtside covered, as the hosts stretched the lead to 13, but 6 straight Braden Inger points cut it to 5 once more. Try as they might, though, they couldn't quite grab hold of the Knights and they pulled away to lead by 14 at the final break. The score 78-64. The Knights' advantage reached a game-high 17 early in the fourth period, but Storm chipped away and hoped for a game-changing run. It didn't come, though, and the final buzzer confirmed a 96-87 defeat.
Lee Allinson said his side were taught a lesson by hosts Worthing on Saturday as the Tudors fell to a 4-0 defeat. Hemel have enjoyed an excellent season so far but fell well short at the weekend, having won 3-0 at home to Weston-super-Mare just 4 days earlier. Allinson told the club's media it was a sobering day. He said, "It was a humbling lesson. I warned the players before the game that we're creating a tag of a good side, and that's a positive. But when you sit third in the league and you come to places like Worthing, who want to try and achieve the same as we achieve, they're going to raise their game now, and you see what it meant to them. You've got 2,000 through the gate, and they're making good noise, and I just thought it was maybe a game too many for us, and we looked very tired. We lost a couple through illness before the game, but I thought all 4 goals were really avoidable, and when you come to places like this against a very well-drilled, good footballing side, when you start losing the game, you become disjointed, and they're going to pick you off, and that's what they've done. Full credit to Worthing. They've beaten us fair and square, and they've let us know about it as well, because that's the tag we've created, and they were the better side. But we looked a shadow of ourselves, and I think that's to be expected. Hemel were back in action on Tuesday night with a trip to Ware in the Hart Senior Cup after this week's Gazette had gone to press. They then turned their attention to the FA Trophy on Saturday with the visit of Chelmsford City. Alison said, "The season will be full of ups and downs, good results and bad results, and I think we've had a lot more good results this season than bad, but we don't dwell on defeats. We have to get back at it again, and I've got a seriously hard-working side where today just too many good players slipped below their levels."
We're coming to the end of this week's news. Sunrise and sunset times for this weekend are 7:21 and 16:11. For those with access to the internet, our news is uploaded to our website soon after the recording each week on Thursday evening. This can be found by visiting dtnhemel.org.uk. If you wish to listen on Alexa, say, "Alexa, open the talking newspaper skill." Alexa will ask you which broadcast you want to listen to. When prompted, reply, "Play the Decorum Talking Newspaper." This part can be tricky. If Alexa offers the wrong station, just say no and then try again. For those who are listening to this week's news via a memory stick, after the music, there is the amenities section that gives details of various groups and the contact details of organisations. Please remove your memory stick carefully from the player and return it to us in the pouch provided. Seal it up firmly. Turn the label over and post it back to us using any Royal Mail postbox. No stamp is required. Thank you for listening. Until next time, it's goodbye from all your readers, the editor, and Andrew, your technician for this week.